This is On Target St. John's. A look at politics, crime, education. What's happening here with the people who know. The views and opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of this station. Now, your On Target St. John's host, Linda Swain.
Good afternoon, everyone. Well, after a winter election that dragged out for 2.5 months, Premier Andrew Furey has finally unveiled his new expanded cabinet. The Premier has signaled he's ready to get down to business after an extended period under a caretaker government. That includes tackling the province's serious fiscal situation. Well, here to talk a bit about that and about some of the work that's been occupying the province's largest public sector union is none other than NAIP President Jerry Earle. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Linda. How are you doing?
Good. And have you got your sun lamps on to try and get some much-needed vitamin D?
That's what I was just going to say. It's great to be here with you and your listening audience on this foggy Friday. I guess as Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, we come accustomed to this. And we got to get those sun lamps to get our vitamin D.
For sure. So yesterday, the new cabinet was revealed. What do you make of it?
Again, we follow politics quite closely as a public sector and private sector union, and obviously we're a fair number of our employees, or our members, I should say, are direct employees of the provincial government. So it's an interesting relationship for us in that we have actually people that work for the provincial government, unlike many. So we follow this closely, and then decisions that are made in cabinets certainly of an interest to us. Obviously, we've seen a number of people that have been in the cabinet before brought back into cabinet, but we've certainly seen some new faces and some cabinet positions added. A couple of those encouraging, such as Pam Parsons as the Minister Responsible for Women and Gender Equity, something that Labour women's groups have advocated for a long time, and I believe a good move by this current government to recognise that. So something, again, and on that, Linda, we've already reached out, writing 9 ministers already, requesting meetings, and 2 of these ministers have already responded. Minister Sarah Studley and Minister Jerry Byrne already reaching back to us to start that dialogue that's necessary.
Well, it's almost like you're reading off my notes here, because I asked if I was going to ask, will you be meeting with the Premier or government officials? You've already made those requests. It's time to get down to business. What are some of the priorities from your perspective?
We have an extensive list of things that we need to deal with, not only on behalf of our direct government employee members, but members across agency boards and commissions. We're a union that represents some 96 different bargaining units across Newfoundland and Labrador. So we have a variety of issues that we're always engaging various ministers on and department officials. And even while this prolonged election was undergo, we were still carrying on a number of issues, but some had to wait until ministerial appointment. So now that those in place, like I said, Linda, there is 9 ministers that we've already written. And kudos to a couple already, like Sarah Studley. I don't know if the letter was in her office when she was immediately responding with a preparedness to meet with us. We want to have those lines of communication open and continue to collaborate on issues. There's going to be things, as we have in the past, agree to disagree on. But as you've heard me say many times, when there are issues, you have to sit down and talk about them and try to identify what resolutions are, if we can come to a collaborative approach on those. So we're prepared to do that with any of the ministers, ministers that we've worked with in the past, such as Minister of Health and Minister of Education there now, and some of the new ministers coming on. So we certainly welcome that opportunity and have reached out already to arrange that, and including the Premier himself, that we'll be sitting down and talking to in the coming weeks. And I can only imagine most of these ministers certainly, especially with new portfolios, have to adjust to that, and we'll give them that time. But we got to get on with the business of representing Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, our members.
History has shown that the relationship between governments and public sector unions have not always been easy. How would you categorize the current relationship, or is it too early to say?
From all indications, Linda, and Premier Furey has only been on the scene now for a short period of time, and I understand coming to that, we've had some conversations, myself and the Premier, during the election campaign. He's certainly, a couple of examples he's clearly demonstrated to us, just most recent, in sitting in on, I believe, the first time in our history where a Premier of the province actually sat in on a meeting with licensed practical nurses and personal care attendants from across the entire province for a full 90 minutes. and actually listen to their concerns. And because we've been saying, as you've heard NAEP say for a couple of years now, the issues in healthcare and specifically long-term care, and for him and his minister and deputy minister to take that time, we're open to see that continue. I understand there's lots of things he has to deal with. Now, there's some concerns too, like I said, public sector unions, with government being the employer in some cases, and overseeing agency boards and commissions, we have differences at times, and we will point those out at times. And just as recent as yesterday was concerning when I seen the two new cabinet ministers, I refer to them as the two Johns, John Ogan being positive and optimistic in a comment on Twitter saying, there are bright days ahead for our province. I'm thrilled to be part of that. I believe our province does have bright days ahead, even though we're at difficult times. But on the other end, Minister Habit, which holds a position that we have a significant issues in, making comment in an interview that I've seen saying, I would assume there's things going to be, you know, downsizing. I guess that's the cabinet, and we'd be starting it as early as today. So two completely opposing views, and I don't believe that's reflective of Premier Fury, and we'll be asking that when we meet with him. He certainly said that publicly, Linda, as your news agency and others reported, that he's talked about that cuts to public service is not the answer, austerity is not the answer. So I was a little bit surprised in the first interview that Minister Abbott had that he was to make those comments and leading a department of CSSD where we're already talking about a shortage of resources. And just had a meeting yesterday, ironically, which was positive before the minister took office, so maybe we should have delayed him taking office, because that was not positive commentary to our social workers in Newfoundland and Labrador that are under immense stress and have been doing incredible work through this pandemic.
And I want to explore some of those issues a little later on in the show. My guest today on Target is NAEP President Jerry Earle. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
My guest today is Jerry Earle, the president of NAEP, the province's largest public sector union. And we've been talking a little bit about the new cabinet that was sworn in yesterday. And this cabinet is larger, Jerry, which of course requires greater resources, higher costs. So what does that signal to you?
That's something, Linda, again, that we've certainly had members reach out and point out to us that the cabinet is larger. And again, we will look at what the purpose behind this. I've listened to what the Premier said in order to do some of the work that's necessary. And sometimes it takes additional resources to do work. But we got to balance that against the fiscal situation in this province, because we also are saying in some areas that there's additional resources needed on the front line. So we'll be talking about that. The one I just touched on, for example, CSSD, we know there's a shortage of social workers, and that's where Minister Abbott has gone into. So we will point that out, and that, yeah, there's additional resources you need, and you need additional resources on the front line, long-term care, lab and x-ray, student assistance, home care, there's a number of areas. So we will watch closely to see the purpose and expansion of the cabinet, and sometimes additional resources necessary. We can't be wasteful, but we need to monitor that closely, the purpose behind the extension of the cabinet.
So we've had a lot of talk about fiscal restraint and yes, tackling the province's difficult fiscal situation. How will this expanded cabinet go over if there are cuts to be made in the public service?
I'll be up front. It won't go over well at all, and we'll be certainly raising that and having a conversation. But when I've listened to all the conversations in recent, including those of the Premier himself, I think he's clearly said on a number of occasions now, and we'll remind them of that, and I don't think he needs to be reminded, because he's been clear in that he's recognizing, and we'll hold him to it, and we'll have those conversations, that cuts, austerity has been proven not to work, even though there are some business groups they'll advocate that, because that's the approach that they take when they get into trouble. They'll reduce their frontline workers without doing much to contribute to economies, as long as they keep filling their own pockets. So that's not the approach when you put young people, Newfoundlanders, Labradorians out of work. Is there things that we have to do in this province? And we have said, too, as a union, we're prepared to be a part of the conversation. We need to be invited to the table to have those conversations, because most time, Linda, frontline workers are left out. The average Newfoundland and Labradorian are left out, while business groups have a decent path to government offices. Well, that's been changing in recent years, and we're pleased to be part of that change, advocating on behalf of our members and even workers that are not part of unions, because we advocate for them as well. It's not just about our members, and we'll continue to do that.
We spoke with you, I think it was just before Christmas, about the Green Report, and you had expressed some very serious misgivings about that entire process at that time. Of course, the interim report was due, what was it, the end of February? It's hard to keep track of the calendar now. The end of February, and the final report was due, if I'm not mistaken, sometime this month. That process has been delayed somewhat, but we are expecting that report eventually. What are your thoughts on that?
We remain concerned about the Green Report, and I think, like I said, Linda, we talked before Christmas. We had a meeting where we walked away from that meeting having very grave concerns about what we urged in about an hour-long meeting, a meeting that she was going to end first when she realized that we were not going to go into a meeting and keep this information from our members, and that's not the way we work. And we talked about it publicly, and we've continued to talk about it publicly. So there are certainly things, and without knowing what's in that report, we can only base it on the history of the individual that's chair of that report. We know what she's done with Royal Mail and what she's done with Canada Post and what she's done with CP Rail and those areas. So that raises red flags for us. Now, we've heard the Premier again say on that this is not a report that's going to be fully implemented. It's a report that's going to contain recommendations, and they will pick which recommendations. So we'll monitor that closely, and in these meetings that we have asked for, and meetings we'll continue to ask for with the Minister and with the Premier, we will want to talk about and have a seat at the table in conversations on the impact of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians and hard-working Newfoundlanders and Labradorians and public sector and private sector employees that we represent, what recommendations might come out of this report. And again, we've said we're prepared. We live here too. Our members live in the communities across Newfoundland and Labrador and have contributed every day through their money and through their hard work to this province, and we want to continue to do that. So we have a vested interest in our province thriving and doing well. Because like I said, we live here, we work here.
So you did have those brief conversations sometime before Christmas. You weren't too pleased with how that went
Not at
the
at
time.
All.
I remember you had some choice words at the time. Are you hopeful that what you heard is open for this type of discussion that you're intending to have?
I'm certainly hoping that we will have an opportunity, as other labor groups, as the Federation of Labor will have, and other groups outside of labor, that we will be part of any discussion and influence in how those decisions are made, rather than finding out afterwards. Because that's what's happened a lot of times in Newfoundland Labor, where decisions are made and frontline workers ultimately pay the price, and they fund it off the decisions after they're made and have no opportunity to have any input and offer alternative views. So that's what we're asking to be part of the dialogue. And yes, if there's recommendations coming here that they would be shared with us, and we would have an opportunity to have input and probably offer alternative views, so that there are groups now already established in the province that are prepared to offer alternative views, have already started to do that. Workers in Newfoundland, Labrador, whether they're NAEP members, whether they work in a retail store, whether they work in a pharmacy, whether they work in home care, have a right to be included, and not just business groups as in the past.
Can you touch on any of those alternate views, how those views might help to help the fiscal situation here?
Again, when you talk to frontline workers, we just had a presentation that we've done to Elf Accord in El this morning. We've been talking about it for several years now. And to give an example around air ambulances and that, we've had a committee that's in place that have suggested ways that they believe, because they're frontline, they're in the operations, they understand the operation. And while it may not sound like a lot of money, but to an individual would be saving of upwards of $1 million or more in air services. This is a division which has 40-something employees. So again, if you start looking at whether it be in healthcare and education, whether in our colleges, what frontline workers may have to offer, when you put the cumulative effect of that, that may amount to many millions of dollars that can be saved. Management efficiencies. I look at some of the regional health authorities, for example, Linda, when they're actually contracting out the management of various services. I'm not sure why we'd be contracting out the management services to companies on the mainland when these regional health authorities should be able to do that themselves with the management team that they have in place. Or if they're going to contract to those management services, do they need as many management as they have on staff at that point in time with the service contracted out?
The provincial government, up until very recently, had been using, I guess, attrition as a way to shrink the public service. And the former minister, Tom Osborne, indicated, you know, that job cuts were not the way to go. Do reductions in the public sector help save money, or could it possibly result in increased costs? I'm thinking in terms of overtime, because we've heard those kinds of concerns from the nurses' union, for instance.
Absolutely, and we've been saying that along with the Registered Nurses Union, again, by reducing in some areas, and some just in the business community don't seem to get it for some reason, when you reduce services, when you take people out, it places an additional burden on those areas. So what we have now seen, for example, in healthcare, there's certain top 10 lists that you do not want to make. Well, what's happened now in healthcare, for example, in long-term care, the top two injured categories of employees are licensed practical nurses and personal care attendants. So that's because there's insufficient resources in those areas. So it's just a wheel that we're on there now that's causing, like you just said, additional overtime. So that's increasing the cost. So sometimes having additional resources will actually reduce the cost. And that's been looked at now collaboratively between NAEP and the Department of Health with Minister Hag and his deputy. And that was a meeting we just had about a week or so ago that the Premier actually sat in on along with Minister Hag, talking about those things. If we under-resource areas, it actually costs more, and it's going to cost taxpayers in Newfoundland and Labrador more. So we're prepared to be part of those solutions, as we have in the past, and we will going forward.
There's been a movement within government in the last number of years towards a P3 model when it comes to development of provincial infrastructure. I'm thinking in terms of long-term care homes and health care facilities and those kinds of things. There was a hue and cry at the time from the public sector saying this is not the way to go. We've had some of these situations, you know, in our midst for a couple of years. How are they working?
What we've done, knowing that government was going to completely back off, because if you remember, go back to a previous administration, I think it was when Minister Kent was there, they were going to move to a P3 model in which the infrastructure and the staff were going to be moved toward the private sector. We brought forward, we launched a campaign at that time, NAEP, and actually countered where that was not in the best interest of the province. So they've moved to a model now where their infrastructure is being built for P3, and that's for taxpayers, Newfoundland and Labradorians and unions to question, because we still don't think that's the best utilization. That's just putting payments off down the road where our children or grandchildren are going to pay for that infrastructure with 25 and 30-year plans. What we did as NAEP and took the lead in doing this as NAEP was putting language in our collective agreements that says if you build this infrastructure, which they've done several now, that the staff within those facilities have to remain public sector employees. So we went on the job side security of that. We brought it to attention to general public, the funding model concept and the problems with it, and that's still there. So Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, us collectively, will have to judge whether going that way is best, because it's just an accounting practice on the books that makes it look like it's cheaper, but you and I, if we're around long enough, we'll be able to say it actually wasn't.
My guest today on Target is the president of NAEP, Jerry Earle. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And we're back. My guest today on Target is NAEP President Jerry Earle, and we've been talking about some of the situations facing the province, and we've been under the caretaker convention for quite some time now. Has that exacerbated things in your view?
Initially, Linda, it did cause some problems because what some agency board and commission officials were doing, where they were coming back to us saying, well, we can't go ahead with this meeting, or we can't go ahead with this that we had planned because we're in caretaker convention. We reached out to government officials and had some of that clarified, like I just talked about, the committee that was working on LPN PCA issues in NAIT facilities, that were working on issues with CSSD, home care issues. We were being told that these meetings couldn't continue. That got rectified, so we continue with the progress on those things to the benefit of those frontline workers and the services to New Flanders Labradorians. So initially it did impact, because had it gone on, we would have had 70-odd days where there would be no communication on issues critical to our members, thus issues critical to New Flanders Labradorians and services that we had to provide.
Do you think there was a lack of understanding on what the caretaker convention exactly means and what can happen under that?
I think there was certainly in areas a miscommunication or a lack of understanding with some officials. There were some new people into place, maybe that contributed to it, or some people, I'm not sure why they made the decisions that they did at the time, but we certainly questioned it. We were having monthly meetings, for example, during the pandemic with regional health authorities. They even got cancelled, and NAIP had enough of it. On a Friday afternoon, we sent a message that absolutely, we're not standing for this. Credit to government officials, within 20 minutes they responded and reestablished those meetings. So sometimes you really got to push to get the attention, and we have no problem doing that, speaking on behalf of our members and their families that live here in this province.
You mentioned the situation involving LPNs and PCAs. You have raised serious concerns about staffing in long-term care facilities and the like in the past. What kind of an impact has COVID had on work and services in those types of facilities?
When you think of where the staffing levels are in long-term care across Newfoundland and Labrador, and I can really speak for the facilities that we represent, which are the vast majority of long-term care, when you think of it, we have not had a single incident in these facilities. And when you look across the country, knowing that we do have shortages, we know our staff, long-term care, LPNs, PCAs, dietary, laundry, social workers, they're all working above and beyond their regular scheduled shifts. They go to work sometimes, supposed to be working a 12-hour shift or 3 12s in a row. They don't get off at the end of those shifts, so their families are left then with childcare issues. On their days off, they're being called in repeatedly, so they're working excessive amounts of overtime. They're at a point now that they need a break. We've been 13 months in this pandemic, and I really fear what the year ahead brings us in that regard. We have had those discussions, like I said, just as recent as last week with the Minister, Deputy Minister and Premier, and a collective working group that we have put together with NAIP. And I believe it was just on the 31st of March, we had a collaborative group made up of frontline managers, regional health authority officials. I sat in on it myself, our staff, and our LPNs and PCAs again. I think there were 60-something people on that Zoom call talking about what's going on there and prepared to find solutions. It's a situation that didn't happen in a couple of months, and it's going to take longer than a few months to fix. But first of all, it was identifying there was a problem, which has been done now and acknowledged. And we have done work now. We've increased seats in our public colleges here in Newfoundland, Labrador now, and actually put seats in communities where they never existed before to train Newfoundlanders and Labradorians to work in these facilities and continue to do the invaluable work looking after our aged and those with disabilities in these facilities. And we'll continue to do that. That's my background. I'm quite proud of my background. So we will continue to do what we can to advocate for the proper care and the proper working conditions for those members in those facilities.
Very early in the pandemic, some public sector workers were told, nurses and others in the healthcare field in particular, were told, guess what, you're not going to get any vacation in the foreseeable anyway. Has that worked itself out? Did you encounter similar kinds of things within your bargaining unit? And are those people able to get the time off that they deserve?
Absolutely. We've encountered those problems, and the pandemic has really heightened those concerns. We've had them preceding that. But during the pandemic, obviously, when additional resources are needed, or at times when we had the latest outbreak at one point, I don't know if people realize, like, not just between NAEP, but with the Nurses Union, AHP, and some non-union non-management. We had as many as 500 people in isolation. So that puts an additional burden on those other staff, so they cannot access leaves. I just spoke to a young woman, actually, that can't even get leave now for her own wedding that's coming up. So those things we have to deal with. Those things have to be addressed. These frontline workers have contributed immensely, especially during this pandemic, but they do this every day, not just during the pandemic. They go in care for our loved ones with compassionate and affectionate care. They do it to the best of their ability, but they're really being burnt out. You don't hear them out there complaining extensively. There is frustrations. You have seen last year where there was certainly some protest at NAEP sites, and that could likely happen again if people can't access leaves, because people, no matter who you are or where you work, you're entitled to a break away from work, and that's what vacation time is, and you should be able to access it. So we're going to continue to advocate on those fronts. But yes, people are having difficulty getting a simple vacation. And again, on that, we set up a joint committee last week made up of registered nurses and NAEP members and management and QP and AHP to talk about that very issue of vacation for the approaching fiscal year.
Early in the show, you expressed some concern about recent comments made by John Abbott, the new Minister of Children, Seniors and Social Development. I think that's the name of the portfolio off the top of my head. Social workers, of course, another group of essential government workers who have seen some added challenges over the last year. Are staffing levels enough to address caseloads, and how does the minister's comments play into all of that?
The minister's comments, first of all, the timing couldn't be worse. It was a new minister coming into the department where we have highlighted concerns and we're making progress. The previous minister that was there had met with us, the minister before that had met with us, the deputy minister. We have a joint working group that is set up. At the very time that this minister was making these comments, I'm not sure if he realized, but our joint working group was meeting at a very productive meeting, was what reported to me, only to hear on the supper hour news last night the comments of a minister that's about to take over his department. That's what he's saying. I guess that's what the cabinet will be starting to do probably as early as today, referencing, I would assume that's going to be, you know, downsizing. How do you balance that against a department? And you've heard us talk about it, and I believe, Linda, you and I have had conversations about the impact on social workers across Newfoundland and Labrador now. Some of that has been addressed, but we still know there's vacancies there. We still know there's excessive workload. We still know there's burnout and stress and mental health injury. And to have a new minister coming in, and I don't believe it's reflective of this government at all. I don't believe it's reflective of what Premier Fury himself has said, but we've requested a meeting already with Minister Abbott and with Premier Fury, and believe me, I will be putting that directly to that minister. I believe he should come out and clarify those comments, because that was totally inappropriate and goes counterproductive to that old department. Because if you look at what that department is supposed to do, it's certainly not supposed to be about cutting. It's supposed to be enhancing supports for individuals and families and communities, achieving approved healthcare and all host of issues. So I think that was untimely and absolutely uncalled for by Minister Abbott.
Have caseloads increased within what used to be known as the Department of CFS, I suppose, since COVID?
Caseloads, I'm not sure there's been a measure put in place to say that they've increased by certain numbers, but we all know the impact that COVID is having on all of us collectively across. It affects everybody's mental health in different ways. It affects family structures in different ways. We hear of increases in domestic violence and that. So our social workers are involved in all of this. So it is having an impact on the caseload. Plus, already, like I said, there is a shortage of social workers. Now, the working group, the deputy minister, has been doing work. There some positions have been filled, but we still have a shortage. And social workers are an example of one group that have really worked tirelessly through this whole pandemic. People don't realize the diversity of membership, Linda, that we represent across Newfoundland and Labrador, whether it be in our schools, our healthcare system, lab and x-ray health professionals, our colleges, municipal workers, even the private sector. We have members that not a facility closed down, for example, Country Ribbon, Purity Factories, Browning, RV, Labatt's, Public Service Credit Unions, all of these members we proudly represent. And then I think of our home care workers, for example, almost 5,000 of them across Newfoundland, Labrador, that kept people safe in their communities, in their homes, and done yeoman's work throughout this entire pandemic.
My guest today on Target is the president of NAEP, Jerry Earle. We'll be back right after this.
Now back to Linda Swain on Target St. John's on VOCM.
And my guest today is the president of NAEP, Jerry Earle. And Jerry, you're a former paramedic. Can you be a former paramedic? Or are you always a paramedic?
I think you always carry that with you. Even my wife comments, sometimes when I'm driving down the road, see an ambulance comes, she'll look at me and say, you'd love to still be doing that. And it was a job I love doing. I have a great respect for the profession. I have a great respect for workers in general. But it is a job that I truly love doing.
So what's the latest regarding paramedics and red alerts within the Eastern healthcare system especially? Because that has been a fairly serious issue that you've been raising for some time now.
Absolutely. Yeah, and during the election campaign, we had reached out to the Premier and the Minister, and that's part of the meetings that now we're now requesting. But internally, there's certainly been conversations with our NAEP staff, our frontline paramedics and management there, with some changes already made that will help address that. Like, we have even some frontline managers and supervisors put in place now. We've had some changes to the servicing model, but we'll continue now to see what needs to be done. Reviews have been done there. We don't need a new review. We just need to implement some of the recommendations that were made in the past. So we're going to follow up on a conversation that we had with the Premier himself and Mr. Hagee. That's two of the invites that we have already gone out, as I mentioned earlier. So that's part of the agenda when we meet with the Minister and the Premier to talk about what can we do to address these concerns so that we're not continuously in this situation. We're seeing the physical and mental injury to the staff. And then as concerning is the delay in service to people when they have a health emergency. So we have to balance that and address that, that it cannot continue to go on the way that it has.
What's the latest on collective bargaining? I know you sort of cringe when you hear that because it's never really finished. You have so many bargaining units, but what's
Absolutely.
The latest when it comes to collective bargaining?
Collective bargaining, Linda, and many would not realize, they probably hear us when we're talking about public sector bargaining. NAEP represents some 97 different collective agreements, which the public sector makes a greater part of, but there's not a week going by that we don't have some form of collective bargaining or new groups we've organized that have chose NAEP to be their bargaining agent, and we're actually doing that today as we speak with a new group. So we're always in some form of bargaining. We just concluded the collective agreement yesterday with a home care sector that has employees across the province, close on 900 members after an arduous round of bargaining, and I applaud both negotiating teams. Remember, public sector contracts, which NAEP took the lead on as extended contracts, believe it or not, we're only a year away from those extended contracts expiring. I don't know what others are doing, but NAEP is already starting to prepare for that process because we anticipate it's going to be a difficult round of bargaining given the situation that our members are in and the situation that our province is in. So we're already preparing for that, though it's 11 months out.
Does all the talk about tough decisions and fiscal situation have an impact on that dynamic?
Absolutely does, because I don't know if everybody hangs on politicians' words as much as I do. I'm sure certainly others do. So I listen to what politicians are saying closely. I listen to what governments are saying closely. I listen to what business groups are actually advocating for. But the thing is, we got to remember the value that we've just seen demonstrated. This work is done all the time, but we've just clearly seen the value of public services through this pandemic, what those public sector employees are doing for us today, keeping us safe, such as the social workers and the paramedics folks that we just mentioned, the home care workers, the lab and x-ray people that are doing all the diagnostic imaging, those swabs and people that are vaccinating people right now, that's public sector employees that deserve the recognition that they get every day, not just during the pandemic. They have done incredible work from Dr. Fitzgerald down. That's all public sector employees. So we have to value what they do, not only respect them during the pandemic, we got to always respect the work that's done by paramedics and public sector employees. Like I said, whether that be in our labs, whether that be in our hospitals or long-term care, whether it be in our colleges, our universities, our schools. So it's challenging. We recognize it's going to be challenging, but we're prepared to sit down, as we always have, and negotiate fairly, recognizing the situation that we're in.
It's generally accepted that the status quo is not sustainable, and the Premier himself referenced those tough decisions that need to be made, if he didn't actually use those words in his victory speech after the election. So where do you see this all going?
And again, I listened to the Premier's victory speech about tough decisions, and depending on what those tough, most decisions that you have to make every day I come to work here, we have to make tough decisions sometimes. Sometimes decisions that frontline workers don't understand because we look at it as a more holistic approach and make a rational decision. Sometimes there are very difficult, tough decisions that union leaders, premiers, ministers have to make every day, long as they are done and communicated effectively, long as there's a collaborative approach. You don't just make cuts for the sake of making cuts. If you remember the budgets of previous years where we just a sheer number, we need to save X number of dollars, therefore that equates to these number of people are losing their jobs. That has never worked. It's not going to work. That approach only causes more harm to the provincial economy. There is alternatives that we can sit down and look at collaboratively if frontline workers are given that opportunity to have a seat at the table, and most often they've been excluded. We're going to advocate for that. We're going to push for that, and we're prepared to sit at the table and have tough conversations. Because like I keep saying, we are Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, the close on 28,000 members we represent and their families. So we make up a significant part of the population of Newfoundland and Labrador. So what happens is this problem affects us too, but we need to see our province prosper so we can collectively benefit from that. Because I share what Minister Ogan said, there are bright days ahead for this province. Yes, we're going to have some tough days, but I'm optimistic. I've lived there all my life. I didn't move off to the UK somewhere. I've lived there all my life. I'm going to stay here. I plan to retire here. So this province has my best interest and the best interest of the members that I represent. So we're prepared to work with, whether it be Minister Hogan, whether it be Premier Fury, in the best interest of Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, because we're part of that equation.
Your job, of course, is to protect the jobs of your membership.
Absolutely.
So where can those efficiencies, or how can those efficiencies be met?
When you look at efficiencies, it can't always be linear about the equation of, like I just said earlier, if we need to save $5 million, that equates to X number of jobs. Are there things we can do different, like the healthcare accord, which I am actually sitting on representing Nate now, taking a different view of healthcare, and by changing things, looking at the social determinants, if we can have healthier people, would lead to healthier outcomes. So there's ways of saving money without always saying that frontline workers are going to pay that price. Let's ask the business community what they can do to contribute more in the province, because they're always pointing the finger at you and I collectively, our frontline workers, saying we have to lose our job or pay more. Well, let's see what can be done on those sides. And there's some difficult conversations. Yes, we may have had difficult conversations around the big business groups, or those that are making more than a couple hundred thousand dollars may have to pay a little bit more in the province. They can afford to. So that's some of the tough decisions got to be made as well, asking groups that can afford to pay more, not always the low-income worker having to give more.
Is there duplication within the public service, either within or outside of frontline workers that are represented by you?
There's nothing, I wouldn't say that there's duplication. There's areas where would suggest we can take a look and say, and if you listen to frontline workers, the very example I used earlier, I believe, in the show, talking about air ambulances, where the public sector is clearly identified, and they just presented to AlphaCord NL a way which those 43 workers, I think it's just 43 of them, are saying, within our group, we can come up with a way to save the province around $1 million. So if you put that across the entirety of the workforce, we're talking many, many millions of dollars in examples that frontline workers can bring forward to find efficiencies, ways of doing things better, probably better diagnostic services, pharmaceuticals that we talked about with Eldecord yesterday. People don't realize that 15% of the health budget is around pharmaceuticals. Can we do things better in group purchasing, for example, for pharmaceuticals, rather than spending 15% of the healthcare budget on drugs alone? So there's a number of things we can look at that does not affect frontline workers, frontline Newfoundlanders and Labradorians, that will result in savings for this province. Let's cut the bonuses for Nalcor.
Just under 2 minutes left. Your final message to members and other Newfoundlanders and Labradorians?
To Newfoundlanders and Labradorians in general and our members, like, we've used the term old-fast Newfoundland that Dr. Fitzgerald has done, and our entire team in healthcare, from Dr. Fitzgerald down right to the person that's doing the swabbing, to the person that's doing the vaccination, to in our labs that's doing the test. I want to thank everybody for what they've done in Newfoundland. It's been tough. It's been tough on all of us collectively. I would love to be able to travel outside Newfoundland, Labrador, visit some of my family. I have a son in Calgary. I'd love to be able to see him or have him come see me. Let's all tough a little bit longer. We will get there. Even though it's quite foggy today, there is a light at the end of this tunnel. We're making progress, but we still have some months ahead, and we will get there because I believe we do have a bright future. We just got to work together, be kind to one another, and let's keep doing what we've been doing for the last 30 months.
Nate, President Jerry Earle, thank you for your time. Have a great weekend, and to borrow a portion of the phrase, someday the sun will shine.
And thank you, Linda, very much to you and your listening audience. It's always a pleasure, and I look forward to our next conversation.
Wonderful. And we'll be back on Monday, so stay tuned for that, and thanks for listening.